Canon Press presents Table Grace, a lady seminar at the Grace Agenda 2013 conference featuring Nancy Wilson, Becca Merkel, Rachel Jankovic, and Heather Wilson. Sponsored by Christ Church, Moscow, Idaho. Copyright 2013. Thank you for listening to Table Grace.
Father in heaven, thank you so much for today and the chance for all of us to gather together. I pray that you would help all of us to be edified today through what we hear, and I pray that you would be with me and help me to have the right words to say that would minister to these ladies here. And thank you for all of this in Christ's name. Amen. All right. So I got the topic of food guilt, and it's huge, actually, that topic. I don't know if you've ever stopped and tried to think through it yourself, but I had to for the talk, and it's massive, actually. And I probably could just stop there and say food guilt, and you probably all have something in your head already, some place in your own life that it's like, oh yeah, it's this nagging thing, and I just, you know, I'm not sure what to think about it, or I always feel guilty when I eat that, or, you know, wound up about something. All of us probably are. I would guess every woman in this room has something that you've, you know, felt guilty about, wrestled with, not sure where you put that. How do you process all the stuff the world and your friends are telling you all the time about food and what you should eat and what you shouldn't eat? And it's probably all in very different places. And I would think in a crowd this big, we've got, I mean, how many different issues? Because we can feel guilty, you know, about our size, like we need to go on a diet. Why can't I stop eating? You know, I can't stop eating the Cheetos or whatever. I hate Cheetos, so that's not drawn from personal experience. but, you know, you can feel guilty about that. Like, I need to, why can't I lose weight? Why can't I stop eating? You know, it can be that. It could be, you know, you feel like genetically modified whatevers are bad, and you feel guilty about that. You can feel guilty that your friends cook better food for their families than you do. You can feel guilty about what you're feeding your children. And I would think that if there's no area where you have experienced something like this, you're probably still way too young. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think that it's just me, because if you look at our culture, we are consumed with this problem, actually. I mean, you just look around our country and, you know, and honestly, well, when we were living in England, we heard all the reports about how obese Americans are. And we're like, oh, come now, you know. And then we came home after a year and we're like, ooh, turns out it's true. and, you know, I mean, we do have a culture where we have people being shoveled into vans with forklifts and stuff. I mean, you know, like, and this is not a problem that happens all over the world. So we do have, like, there's that issue. But if you just think about, like, how much we are consumed with just thinking about it all the time. Look at the just the grocery store magazine covers. Everything is about, you know, how to lose weight, how to stop eating that, what you should be eating, 13 foods that are, you know, killing your intestines and raising your cholesterol and sucking your soul out. And it's like, that's it. That is every headline, and that's how we sell magazines. And they're playing to something. They're playing to some issue in the American public. And I don't think this is unique to America, but most of us are Americans, so just talk about that. And I don't know about other cultures. I presume that in places where the biggest need is to figure out something to put in your children's mouths so they don't starve to death, they probably don't wrestle with the guilt issue as much. But we have so much food, and there's so much available to us, and then we get wrapped up. And maybe that's what makes you feel guilty. We have so much food, and there's other people who are starving, and that makes us feel bad. So it's just this tangled issue, and I think especially for women, it's tangled. I don't think most of the men's magazines are about, you know, how to lose weight and how to look better and how to stop eating that. And I mean, you know, it's they may deal with cholesterol too, but it's primarily a woman thing, you know. And why is that? Why is it women are so wound up about food and we can be so easily guilted into feeling like we shouldn't eat that and we should be eating the other thing and I should be feeding my kids this and I should never have given them that and I shouldn't have put that in my mouth constantly, you know? And even if you don't wrestle with it, you're probably bombarded with it on Facebook and when you're checking out at the grocery store. It's a huge issue. And I think, you know, some people have guilt about the food itself. some people have guilt about something else, but then they channel it into food, and then it, you know, it shows itself there. I mean, there's just so many ways that we can feel guilty about it. So food is a guilty subject for us. I think as American women, food is a guilty subject. And we even express it in terms of, I was really bad, I ate the dessert, right? And we put it in almost moral terms, like, I was so bad today, I ate some chips, or I had some fries, or, you know, whatever. And so the question is, why is it guilty? Why is it that, like, if I got up here to talk about hairbrushes or coffee tables, I might be able to get everyone wound into a, you know, maybe if I really emphasize the burning rainforests or something, I could get you there. But not really. I mean, but food, you almost have to just say it and people can feel guilty about something, some aspect of food. And so why is it that can prompt the feeling bad and feeling sort of oppressed response? And I think the answer there is, why is food a place where we feel bad about ourselves or about the food, about whatever. And I think if you stop and think about it, God has always used food to teach us about himself. That has always, from the very beginning, that is what God has used. The very first command was, don't eat that, right? That was the one thing. And if you stop and think about it, the very first sin, the one that gave us all the guilt, all the shame, all the fear, everything, death and sickness, it was a food choice, right? That was the place where a woman sinned and ate something she shouldn't have. And that's what brought everything into the dark state that it's in, right? And I halfway wonder if sometimes when we get so wrapped up in the big stress outs about food, are we kind of wanting to go back and fix that? You know, it's like, yes, that food choice made this big mess, but we can fix it if we eat the right things. We can fix it if we just stop eating, you know, this or that or the other. And this is so old, really, too. I mean, actually, I don't know how many of you know that graham crackers were invented as a cure for lust. So there's that. I don't think it worked because we still have graham crackers and they're not getting the job done. But Mr. Graham, whatever his name was, he invented graham flour, and if you just would eat this, it would cure your lust problems. I mean, this is old. We always think we can fix sin with food, right? We always think like, well, my child is throwing temper tantrums. What should I eliminate from his diet? And I'm sure you've seen this, you know, in conversations on Facebook or whatever. It's like, he's screaming at me when I tell him to go to bed. I'm thinking of cutting out gluten. You know, and it's like, that's going to work about as well as graham crackers fixing a lust problem. And so, but we always think, like, if we just could just eat the right things, if we could only just, and I wonder if it's partly that we just want to fix it with food, like food threw us into this problem, and maybe food can get us out again. Another reason, obviously, is food is omnipresent, right? We have to eat every single day. It's almost insulting how often we have to eat, right? It's like you can hate yourself for what you just ate an hour ago, and then you're hungry again. It's just, it never goes away. It's this constant, like, you have to eat three times a day or however many times. And so that's another reason why I don't think I could generate the same amount of panic amongst people if I tried to talk about coffee tables, because you can take them or leave them, right? You might have a hairbrush, you might not. Probably you do. I was just thinking through that. Maybe you use a pick. Anyway, but it's not so central to your life, right, as food. Food is just omnipresent. And it's been the thing, like I said, that God has used to teach us about himself. So it started in the garden. He said, don't eat that. And then we did. And then throughout the Old Testament, like, how did God teach us about himself and about holiness and about clean and unclean? It was food. It was your food choice. Don't eat that. You may eat the other. Don't eat this one. And it was all to show that God is righteous and he expects righteousness from us, right? Even if you think about just eating the sacrifices, you know, when they would go to the temple and sacrifice and then you eat the sacrifice. This was all you know, training wheels, teaching us about God, teaching us about righteousness, teaching us about holiness. And then the training wheels came off, right? When Christ came, but he gave us himself, and he said, take and eat, this is my body. So again, it's food, it's you're supposed to eat this. And we're all headed towards the supper of the Lamb. So food has been central in the whole gospel story from before sin all the way through to the final resurrection. So it's clearly an important subject. And I think it's why it's so is one that can trip us up so easily because, you know, like I said, other things, how you, scrub your floors or something, not quite as central. God hasn't used that as a picture of grace throughout, you know, all of mankind's history. Another reason is as women, it's central to our calling, right? I mean, you have to eat three times a day. It's an important subject laden with meaning, but then you have hungry people like Rachel was talking about. All the time, hungry people, all these little mouths that just, you can't stop them, you know, you just have to keep shoveling food at them. So it's omnipresent in our lives, what we have to eat, but then as women, we feed people, and that's, you know, a huge part of what you spend your time doing. You know, you have to figure out what you're going to cook, and you have to go to the grocery store, and you've got to get it home and unpack it and remember what you're out of and spend all your time prepping and cooking and serving and cleaning up. And it's a huge subject. So, of course, it's going to take up a lot of our, you know, thoughts. And then we can be easily tripped up and we can easily feel bad and think we're doing it wrong. And then obviously, because food is integral to how we look, you know, that's obvious, an obvious connection. I think as women too, that's a place, how we look is a place where we can feel very vulnerable and very, you know, insecure, and and that's sort of central as well. So food is very tangled up in the very heart of what we think about, what we, you know, feel guilty about. So the thing is, there's lots of different ways you can feel guilty, and I'm sure, like I said, everybody in here probably has a different something, and it could be, guilty about my weight, or guilty about the pesticides that were used, or guilty about what this did to the topsoil, or guilty about starving others, guilty about the treatment of the animals, guilty about our family's diets aren't healthy enough, guilty that the food is unnatural or the food is unhealthy, or maybe it's just general guilt, you know, like maybe it's guilty about something totally else, but you think your food will fix it, like the lust problem, like I was talking about earlier. We think, like, I'm just guilty because I've got all this other sin, but I'm going to try and fix it with the food thing. And it can be, if I would only just cut out this from my diet, then this problem would go away. And that could be anything. You know, if I would only cut out sugar, then I would stop being so fussy at my husband. Or if I could only cut out fat, then I would lose the weight. Or if I could only cut out grains, then I would, you know, and this is, like I said, this is such a huge thing. There are so many fad diets running around. If you cut this one out, you can fix that problem. I almost feel like some people would be so happy if they could just cut out food altogether and get their nutrients by means of shots, you know? Like, if we could just bypass the whole mouth thing altogether and just, injections of some sort. There's some people that would be a huge relief because food is just so something. It's just so laden with guilt. And it can be for whatever reason. It can be because I'm fat or because, you know, whatever. So in the end, though, if you boil it all down, there's only two kinds of guilt, really. There's true guilt and false guilt. Okay, so it's one of the two, and you can be wound up and completely consumed with guilt over something, and maybe you should be, because maybe it's a sin, an actual sin, or maybe it's false guilt, and you should drop it and be done with it. But how do you tell the difference? And especially with food, it's so not cut and dry, right? If I was going to tell you about, like, tithing, for instance, very simple. It's like, divide your money into 10 pieces. There you go. End of story. Take one, give it to God. So, you know, you could do that, and the application would be so simple for everybody. But with food, there's just so many choices. And what about this other thing? And I'm worried about the situation with the, you know, farmers, and I'm worried about cholesterol, and you don't know my son, and you don't know what his problems are. You know, there's so many different applications. And so it's like, are you really guilty for something that is truly a sin, or are you just wound up with a lot of false guilt? How can you tell the difference between the two? And sometimes, I have to say, someone acting in obedience, their actions could look completely different from each other. Like, and then it's hard to tell because we want things to be so simple and just color inside the lines. Don't eat that food. Do eat this one if you exercise however many times a week. We want it to be simple, but God didn't make it simple. And so anyway, how do you tell the difference between true guilt and false guilt? And I think there's a simple answer to that, which is, does this sin have a biblical name? Right? There is no sin in the Bible called eating genetically modified corn. There's just not. And in fact, the Bible has a lot to say about food, and God has declared all foods clean now. I mean, in the Old Testament, sure, there were things you shouldn't eat. You may not touch that. Don't eat the other thing. And actually, just as a total side note, I was thinking about the moment when the foods were like, no, these are clean, and the sheet is, descends from heaven with all that food in there. And if you think about that for a second, imagine, like, just what a horrible choice that would be to have to eat something that you have grown up all your life thinking is not just, like, gross, but, I mean, it had to have been gross. It'd be like somebody trying to make you eat a cat or something. You know, it's just like, we don't eat that. That's not food. That's what gross people eat. And then you think it's a sin on top of that. Like, think of that. I mean, that's huge. Like, put that in your mouth. It's like, imagine how yucked out you would be if you found out that it was a squirrel you just ate or a crow or something. I mean, it's just like, not food, not funny. And you think that's what that sheet was full of, a lot of unclean stuff that you're not supposed to eat. And it's a sin to eat. It's not just gross, but it's wrong. But that's the moment where God says, no, this is food. It's clean. And then we find out, and even if it's been offered up to an idol, you can still eat it, right? It's clean. God has made it clean. And so we know that God has done that. But on the other hand, we also know there are ways to sin with food, genuine ways to sin with food. So it's not like God made it clean, all bets are off, you can go forth and do whatever. And sin never enters into this, right? You can sin with food, and just as you can sin with anything else. But like I said, food is so complicated. So does the sin have a biblical name? And again, like, there's no sin called my children's lunches don't have as many vegetables as my best friend's lunches for her children have. That's not a biblical sin. And so if you're consumed with guilt about that, something to drop, right? But there are ways to sin with food. And I think we have to think in biblical categories when we assess the situation. Like, okay, is this a sin? Does God have a name for it? And we need to not think in worldly terms, right? Because the world is obsessed with clean and unclean foods. I mean, they even call it clean foods. You know, there's a clean food diet. And everybody is wound up about this right now. And so you can't just trust whatever the latest trendy thing is. You have to think in God's categories, not in... And the thing is, the latest trendy thing changes all the time. You know, one minute it's butter, and the next minute it's margarine, and then we're back to butter. Margarine will kill you. It's just, they change all the time. And again, like, how many of those that come up in your sidebar all the time, 10 foods you didn't know are killing you, and 13 foods that will kill you by the time you're 25, and other foods that are, yes, sucking your soul out and everything. So I left my phone over there, and that has my Bible on it. You can borrow the ladybug one. I should have borrowed the ladybug one. Okay, so pulling up my app. So there are ways to sin with food. And what are they? In Colossians, and he's talking about, sin. He says, wherefore, if ye be dead with Christ from the rudiments of the world, why, as though living in the world, are ye subject to ordinances? Touch not, taste not, handle not, which all are to perish with using, after the commandments and the doctrines of men. So you notice that, like, don't touch that, don't eat that, don't do the other thing. That's all worldly. That's something that man invented. So if you find yourself full of no about food, that's this, right? Don't touch, don't taste, don't handle, don't do the other thing. If you're consumed with that, if that's your attitude, then that is a sin, as Colossians says. This is worldly. And it says, these are the commandments and doctrines of men. And the interesting thing is, the next verse, which things have indeed a show of wisdom, right? They look smart in will worship and humility and neglecting of the body. So if you just are really ascetic and you really just don't eat and you really are just, you know, you pretty much subsist on, yeah, vitamin supplements, and neglecting the body, not in any honor to the satisfying of the flesh. And so it's like, it won't cure sin. This is a sin, actually, going around being picky about everything and thinking that's unclean, that's a sin, that'll kill me. And the truth is, like, you're going to die, right? Something's going to kill you in the end. And if you manage to avoid all the foods that will kill you, you will still die. And that's the sorry truth. So that's one way you can sin with food, is to just be no, also no. But there's another way of sinning, and this is just a more obvious one. I mean, straight up gluttony, right? That's always been considered one of the seven deadlies. And this one is in Philippians, which I think is quite an interesting verse, 3:19, that says, I have told you often, and now tell you even weeping, that they are the enemies of the cross of Christ. Okay, so again, this is not the good people we're talking about, enemies of the cross of Christ, whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly, and whose glory is in their shame, who mind earthly things. So it is possible to have your belly be your God, right? And that, I think we tend to think the forklift people, you know, serving their belly, and they can't, you know, just the obvious gluttony. And but I think that actually gluttony is a much bigger problem than that. And I like that verse that says their God is their belly. Because if you ever stop and think about, like, what idolatry actually looks like, it all depends on the idol, right? Like, idolatry in one culture looks very different than idolatry in another, and it kind of depends on the god that they're worshiping. Is it a mean god, or is it a, like, kind of a nice god that, you know, is, what kind of worship does this god want? So if you just think about, like, Molech, okay, in the Old Testament, what did that god want? It wanted your children. Like, you bring your children and you kill your children. That's a mean god. And then you have other gods that, no, it's all about, you know, Bacchus or something. It's all about indulgence and sensuality and wine and drunkenness. You know, that's a different kind of worship, and it's a different kind of god. So how do you know if your god is your belly? I think it's going to look different, right? Do you have a mean belly or a really nice one that really just wants you to eat lots of stuff? So it just, you know, it depends. Like, some people can serve their belly by not eating anything ever. You know, like, what is anorexia but someone who's just consumed with their belly, really? And so they're serving their belly, but they just happen to have a mean one, right? And then other people who serve themselves, serve their belly through other means. And I think that gluttony, if you think of it in terms of, like, you're worshiping your belly, it's going to look different in different people. And that's why I don't think it's nearly as simple as saying, what's your, you know, body fat percentage? This will tell us. I don't think it is that. I think it's completely different for every person. And it's whether or not you're serving your belly or whether you're serving God. And so, like I said, there's, how do you tell if it's true guilt or false guilt? Does it have a biblical name, right? Are you serving your belly or not? Are you serving others, serving God? And so the thing is idolatry always boils down, I think, in the end, to guilt. Like I said, this is about food guilt. Idolatry always boils down to guilt and to fear. And so if you think about the people who worship these horrible little demons or whatever they're worshiping in pagan societies, they are afraid all the time. I mean, you don't have to do very much reading in, like, classical lit, which I teach at Logos, so I can't help it. I just come up with analogies from classical lit. You don't have to read very much to know, like, this was horrible. I mean, the gospel was such good news to these Greeks because they lived afraid all the time, afraid of their gods, trying to appease their gods, trying to do anything to keep the gods away, to keep the gods from noticing. They're scared all the time. And so I think another way of telling it, is this idolatrous? Do I feel about food in an idolatrous way? Are you afraid? Are you always afraid? Then that's a good sign that something is amiss in your priorities. And then guilty. Are you guilty? Do you feel guilty about food? Are you constantly wrestling with that? I think that that might be a good question. Like, who am I serving here? Is it my belly or is it God? Because if you are consumed with guilt or fear, those are the things that our God came to take away, right? He came to get rid of guilt and to get rid of fear. So if you have a lot of baggage there, then it might be, you know, a good question to ask yourself, like, what's my priority here? And again, if you have a bunch of guilt about a whole bunch of silly stuff that doesn't have a biblical name, then you just have to drop it. God came to take that away. He sent his son to take that away. Excuse me. So I think if you ask the question, what are you most afraid of? That can reveal where your allegiance is and what God you are serving. And I'm sure that nobody in here is actually deeply enmeshed in idolatry. But it's a good question, where are your priorities? Because idolatry for us is not going to be leaving little baskets of fruit at the feet of an idol. But it could be in a lot of misplaced allegiance in terms of, who do I listen to about food? Do I listen to God or do I listen to Shape magazine? You know, which one is more important to me? Whose opinions are more important to me? The sort of contributing editors of Oxygen or Vanity Fair or Cosmo or something, or the Bible. And so again, it's just like, where are your allegiances and what do you fear? And if you're afraid all the time or guilty all the time about food, then I think it means it's, you're putting too much there, and you need to drop that, because that is, again, what God came to take away. He came and he banished guilt. He banished fear. He declared all foods are clean. And then he says, take and eat. This is my body, right? This, take it and eat it. And again, it's central to worship, right? We eat his body. And it was broken for us. And why was it broken? But to take away all of our guilt and all of our shame and all of our fear. It's, that should be gone, right? Because his body was broken, and now he gives us food, and he made all foods clean. So you should not get wound up about the corn or about the corn syrup or about the, you know, whatever. And I think also, if you think about it, we as women, again, we cook for people, right? That's a huge part of what we do. We feed people all the time. And we know what it's like to feed someone who's ungrateful and picky, right? Have you ever had this? We had one, and this was killer, just killer. I was cooking Thanksgiving dinner. And so, you know, Thanksgiving dinner, you've been cooking for like 4 days straight. And we had this guest come over, and I don't even remember his name. But he came, and he was such a pill, because he sat there and kind of like poked at the food and kind of sat there. And I think he was wearing sweatpants, because I think we just referred to him after that as sweatpants. But anyway, so yes, the time we had sweatpants to dinner, and he sort of poked at it, and he sort of fiddled, and he wouldn't taste that, and he didn't want the other thing, and he wouldn't talk. It was just like this little black hole at the table. And then he wouldn't even try the dessert. And I was like, seriously, you will eat a piece of pie. And he wouldn't. And I was just like, are you kidding me? Like, this is Thanksgiving, and you're going to sit there and like shovel it around and be like all ungrateful about it and not talk and then just kind of wander out the door at the end. And for me, that was always sort of the epitome of like, wow, okay. So you put all this effort into it and all this planning and everything else, and you put it on the table, and then somebody's like, meh, you know. And maybe it's your kids who are like, I don't like that, and I don't want the other thing. And, you know, or maybe you've had a guest who's picky. And once we went to my grandparents' house, you remember that? Oh, it was so bad. It was just the kids. My parents were somewhere else. And they had this guest who my grandma cooked dinner, put it on the table, and I can't remember what it was, but it was like macaroni or something. And from scratch, she did macaroni from scratch. And he sat down and he says, I would really rather have spaghetti. And all of us kids were like, did you hear that? And she got up and made him spaghetti. And I was like, that was some godliness right there, because I would not have. But anyway, and he just sat there the whole time watching her, like, food is hot, ready to eat. And she got up and went in and made him spaghetti. And she probably has a crown in heaven right now over that one. But anyway, we know what that's like, to have guests like that, or to have kids like that, or whatever. And if you stop and think about it, God has said all foods are clean. What kind of guest are you at his table? Are you the person going around that can't eat that, don't like the other thing, don't want to eat that, that one's going to kill me? That's poison right there. That's not even food. And imagine somebody at your table doing that to what you have set out and said, here you go. And somebody's like, that one's going to kill me, and that one's not food, and that one really isn't food, and I will have a pill, please. And if you just think about what kind of a guest are you at God's table, and what kind of guest are you teaching your children to be at God's table? He has said all foods are clean. And you're going to sit here and pick around and be critical, and I don't like the other one, and that, and this one's going to kill us all. And so are you going to be that kind of guest at God's table, or are you going to be grateful at God's table? Because he has said, here you go. Here's the world. And if you think about, again, the Garden of Eden, that was a garden full of food and provision, and yes, you may eat it. There was one no, right? And if you think about what kind of house do you have, what are your kids growing up with? Is everything a no? Is everything like, that's going to kill you, can't eat the other, no sugar, no eggs, no flour, no, and this will cure your bad temper? Or does your home reflect what God has given us, which is, it's clean, you can eat it. You know, here it is, enjoy it. And the Garden of Eden, again, there was one no surrounded by yeses. And are you teaching your kids to be ungrateful of that and don't eat the other thing? And again, it goes back to the Colossians passage of do not touch, do not taste, do not handle. No, 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 no. That is always in the Bible, in the New Testament, that's wrong. Right? That's being the, like, sweatpants at Thanksgiving. And so we're supposed to be grateful, and we're supposed to receive what God has given to us with thanks and with gratitude, and not sitting there, you know, feeling like it's all evil. Everything on the table is evil. And a lot of times, I think that's what we can end up by default. I think that's what our culture can get really wrapped up in, thinking it's bad. This food is bad. There's something inherently bad about the food because it was, you know, whatever, fill in the blank. It can be anything, because it has sugar, because it has fat, because it doesn't have fat, because it's not enough protein, because it's too much protein, because it was modified, because it was waxed, because it wasn't grown locally, because it wasn't organic. I mean, just, we have a list like 10 miles long of what makes food bad. And the thing is, that's so unbiblical. It's so not how God has treated it, where he has said, here you go, take it and eat it, right? But the problem is, so you say, okay, not supposed to be guilty about food. I'm not supposed to feel laden down with guilt all the time about food. I'm supposed to be grateful. I'm supposed to take what God has given with gratitude and a thank you, right? You're supposed to just be so excited about all the blessings God has given us and all the bounty he has poured out on us. And I mean, just think of it. I mean, it's like, honestly, in America, it's the poor people who are fat. Right? It's the poverty stricken people who are the most obese, who have the biggest problems. Like, we live in an amazingly blessed country. And so if we sit here and turn our noses up at it because God didn't give as much to those people over there, I mean, we're just being nitpicky and difficult. And as women, we of all people should understand what that's like when you hand something to somebody and they won't touch it. And they pull out their little Tupperware of what they were going to eat. And we know what that's like, so we shouldn't be that kind of guest at God's table. But the problem is, like, okay, I'm going to not be guilty. I'm going to feel grateful. Now what? I still have to decide what to eat. It still happens 3 times a day. I still have to decide whether I want to lose weight or whether I don't. Still have to figure out what to feed my family. Am I going to feed them the healthy thing, like my friend, or am I going to feed them something else? Am I going to just let them eat Pop-Tarts day in and day out? You know, like, what am I going to do? You still have to make the choice because you can't eat all of it, right? So you can say, okay, it's all fine and good in theory, but what am I going to eat for dinner? Because you can be grateful and you can decide not to be guilty about it, and that's a great start. But the problem is, you still have to figure it out, right? You still have to go grocery shopping, and what are you going to buy, and what are you going to cook, and what are you going to feed your family? And I think the first key is not to be telling your kids all the time, that's a no, that's a no, that's a no, that's a no. Right? That's just step one. Be grateful, be thankful. Just be so amazed at the bounty that God has given us. And teach your children to be grateful as well. But then comes time to fix dinner. What are you going to do? And should we lose weight? And as Christian women, you know, there's that whole thing. And it's like, what what do you do? And I think, honestly, that question, again, like, there's so many women in this room who all probably have a different place in their life where the guilt can find an easy foothold. I think application is going to look different for everyone in this room, because, again, it's not like tithing or don't murder, you know, something where it's just, here it is. That's how you do it. Application is going to be different, and it requires wisdom and it requires thinking through it. But obviously the first place you have to start is by being grateful and being thankful, and then make your choice. Because any choices made out of shame and guilt and fear and I'm not as good and the other thing is going to taint me somehow, that's going to get you off on the wrong foot at the very beginning. So you need to drop that and realize that that's what God came to save and came to free you from, that oppressive feeling of like, I did it again. I ate a Snickers. And it's like, there isn't a sin called eating a Snickers. There's just not. So that one doesn't have a biblical name. So just drop it. But again, like, it could be a sin. If you're serving your belly, it could be a sin. And that's where it's like, it's just going to look different on everybody. And so what's the sort of rule of thumb then? And I think if you're starting in a place of gratitude, and Rachel referred to this in her talk as well, but freely ye have received, freely give, right? That's how we should treat this. Like, we should understand what God has given us and that we have freedom, and then we give with the same amount of freedom. And then the question is like, okay, what does that look like? What am I going to give? And it has to be not about me. It has to not be all focused on me. It has to be something you're giving to others. And there's so many ways that you can do that. And everyone is going to have a different application. And you can never look at somebody. And I think this is part of the thing. Well, I shouldn't say you never can look at somebody. Most of the time, you can't look at somebody and judge the state of their soul by what they look like on the outside, right? That's a huge part of what God has taught us. He looks on the heart. We don't. You can't say, your waistline shows me that you are in sin. We can't do that. That is not in Scripture. There's no size requirement to get into the kingdom of heaven, right? God's not going to measure your thighs on the way in. And so that's just not there. But the thing is that it's, I think a lot of times we generate the guilt, because if we do that, we can generate the righteousness. And we can feel really good, because it's like, if we have a long list of the stuff that's really bad and it's going to kill us dead if we keep eating it, then we can feel so smug, because that's actually decently easy to follow a list. No, it's not. I take that back. I totally couldn't do it. I could not cut out gluten. I'm pretty sure I do not have the self-control. But some people do. And so, you know, if you just come up with this checklist of like all the bad, 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 well, you just can go over here and eat rice. And that's fairly straightforward. And you can feel so good about yourself and so righteous in your own little handcrafted religion, right? Here's all of the bad sins and here's the good one. And I'm eating something that is local and organic and free of chemical additives. And that makes me righteous. It's like, it doesn't. But I think a lot of times that's why we want the guilt, is almost because then we can fix the guilt by a little homemade something. So how do we put flesh on this then? Like, what are you going to go out and eat? And so it's like, all right, I'm grateful to God for it. Now what? What am I going to feed my kids? And am I going to go on the diet or not? So I think it's, first of all, how do you love God through what you put in your mouth? Right? How do you love God? Well, the first thing is not having that be more important than him. That would be the obvious one. Don't have your God be your belly. How do you love God with what you put in your mouth? And then how do you love maybe your husband through what you put in your mouth? And that's a big question as well. It's like, actually, that could affect my food choices. How am I going to love my husband through what I put in my mouth? And it's like, am I going to tear through those 4 bags of Cheetos or not? And that's another question. But the thing is, we all have different husbands, don't we? And some people, if it's like, okay, I confessed all my false guilt, I got rid of it, and I'm going to go on a diet tomorrow morning. And that could be just absolute obedience. Somebody else could get rid of all the false guilt and say, I am resigning my gym membership tomorrow because this is really in the wrong place in my life. And I am going to stop obsessing about what I eat, and I'm going to go get a cheeseburger this afternoon. And that could be absolute God-honoring obedience, right? Because you're stopping thinking about yourself and you're going to give to somebody else. Because how many moms like just make life is just a pain. I mean, you can't take them out anywhere because nothing's good enough and they won't eat that and the other one's unhealthy. And so maybe some women need to just say, you know what, to their husband, I'm quitting the gym and I'd like to go out to that greasy diner with you this evening. That could be love, you know, for some husbands. And for other women, it could be, you know what, I am just going to quit the greasy diner for a while and I'm going to go on a diet. And if you're starting from a place of gratitude, freely you have received, freely give. You're going to give to your husband with your food choices or your kids. Like, think about, like, how am I going to love God with my food choices? How am I going to love my husband with my food choices? How am I going to love my kids with my food choices? Are you going to be the mom that's uptight and you can have a carrot stick and that's it, end of story? Or are you going to be the mom that serves and loves and feeds them and they feel her love through what they eat at the table? And then how do you love your friends? How do you love strangers with what you put in your mouth? And the thing is, if you drop everything else, all of the false categories that the world has cooked up, all of the, like, this is clean, this is unclean, this is a sin, this is, you know, all of that, just drop it. Be grateful to God and say, He has given to me freely. How am I going to give freely to others? And how am I going to love them? And the question is, lots of times we want to say, well, I'm loving them. They just don't recognize it because it's going to kill them if I give them a cookie. Right? And we like to justify it through, like, this is what love looks like. And that there's that great C.S. Lewis quote about she was the kind of woman who lived for others. You could tell the others by their hunted expression. And lots of times we can do that. Like, we are so sure that this is what love looks like. And that's not how it comes across to anybody else. So when you decide you're going to love somebody, right? If you're thinking about what you're going to buy somebody for a Christmas present, hopefully the most obvious question in your mind is, will they like it, right? Not what do I want for Christmas. You don't buy your husband a really nice strand of pearls for Christmas because that's not hopefully what he wants. And so you should be thinking, how do I love them? How is this going to come across as love to them? Not, it's going to come across as living in a really, really meager sort of refugee camp. But it's love. I promise it's love. Because they're going to get at least an extra 3 months on their life because of their fabulous cholesterol levels. You know, or something. It has to look like love, right? And so that's just what I feel like is the main point, is be grateful to God. Don't get caught up in extra rules. And know that God has made everything clean. He's given us all of this huge amount of bounty. And then be grateful. And then give. And again, as women, you know what it's like if you have somebody who sits down at your table and they're so grateful and thankful and they love it and they have seconds of this one. You're not going to get offended that they didn't eat that. It's not like you have to go out and eat everything that God put in the world. It's not that. You just have to be grateful and then choose what you're going to eat. But do it with love and not yourself as your first priority, but others. Thank you.